Don't give up comfort for style. Mack Weldon's Ace Collection makes it effortless to look good while feeling comfortable. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of our discussion about the running back group for the 2025 Ravens. Disappointing in some ways. Still some optimistic people. We talked about Justice Hill. We talked about Derrick Henry in the first episode. And joining me to do that, I should mention again, is Jason Smith of Huddle It Up Films. Jason, thanks for doing this.
Thank you, Ken. And thanks to everybody for listening. Really appreciate everyone.
Outstanding points from Jason in particular in the first episode. You should go back and take a listen to if you have not. In that, we talked a little bit about whether or not some of the Ravens' DNA was going to be lost. We talked a lot about Derrick Henry's season and whether his missed tackles forced might be largely concept-based, which I think Jason is taking the position on, or more a function of a concession to age or a poor year in terms of just breaking tackles. We had a little bit different opinions on yards before contact and how they might be impacting them, or that the offensive line is responsible for a large number than those. And we did talk back to his career at Tennessee and kind of make some comparisons on missed tackle rate from then. Anything to add to that, Jason? Another point you want to bring up from the first episode?
That was fun. I would just, you know, my main point in this was that, yeah, I don't have the physical numbers for what percentage of outside zone Derrick Henry ran. But obviously Ryan Tannehill wasn't in the shotgun read option a lot. So, when you have an offensive line that's built for outside zone and guys are fundamentally moving laterally instead of, you know, north and south, I think it makes a little bit easier for you to make that first guy miss. That's just something that I've noticed.
Okay, fair enough. Let's move on. We talked about Justice Hill as well, some of the cap savings that are possible. Now we'll move on. We'll talk about Keaton Mitchell. Now, I'm going to start with this comment about Mitchell because he was very clearly the Ravens' best player in camp and the preseason. It looked like he'd return to 2023 form, which I knew he was never going to duplicate statistically, but his ability to cut and make people miss, making all these what I call, I'm sure they weren't, 90-degree angle cuts, when running through traffic, which is just, you don't see at other running backs. Most times I can't tell who's really running the ball well because they have no contact rules and they don't want the, you know, real tackling to occur. So you don't learn anything about the player's ability to make people miss, but you do learn about, you know, how quickly they caught, how quickly they react to defenders being in their way, and how much burst they have to the outside. And it was shocking to me that he was, first of all, that he's inactive for that first game at Buffalo and for several games after that, and that they couldn't find a way to get him on the field.
Frustrating. And decisions like this, game day roster decisions, that I'm looking forward to having a new coach. So there are plenty of things culturally that of course are going to be up in the air and you want to choose the right guy. But when it comes to game day inactives and personnel evaluation, how to best use the 53 guys plus your practice squad guys that are in the building, that to me was a major weakness of John Harbaugh. For all the strengths that he has and strengths that people don't want to give him credit for, having Keaton Mitchell inactive for the first month plus of the season was inexcusable to me.
It was it was surprising, and I would agree. I didn't like a lot of decisions with relation to the game day 48. I'm going to plug a show we have coming up on this channel about the ideal 48 that we'll talk about optimizing the 48-man game day active group. But certainly right. An area where you hear me talk about the four defensive linemen all the time and how much I hate that. Particularly when you're bringing on an extra special teams player with all of the added risk of having less linemen.
There are so many, and I'm definitely not going to derail the show, but I mean, I once had a list of just head scratching decisions and, you know, have not having Keaton Mitchell active during the early part of the season when he's coming off of the preseason that he did. And clearly you weren't alone, Ken. It's like, you can kind of read between the lines from the reports of the reporters. You know, there's not going to be a ton of criticism. I mean, you're in pads, but right. when everybody to a man, from you to everybody else who was in camp, keeps gushing about a guy, you kind of get the point, hey, Keaton Mitchell is back. And for that alone, I would say, you know, in the first show, Ken, we made a lot out of, hey, what scheme is the new OC running? What scheme is the new defensive coordinator running? It has a lot to do with the type of players that we're going to bring in. We're turning over a lot of the roster this year. A lot of holes, some more cap space, but a lot of holes. Keaton Mitchell to me, Ken, is somebody that if I'm a new coach X bringing in, you're like, yeah, if we can keep this guy, let's keep this guy because he possesses the kind of speed and the change up to Derrick Henry that just seemed perfect.
Yeah, I don't even think with or without Derrick Henry, you always got room on your roster for a player like Keaton Mitchell.
There you
go. He's too explosive and too bursty to not want him around. He did come back and play 13 games, averaged 5.8 yards per carry, but did still have remarkably a great deal of difficulty finding touches. I mean, there's one of the things that was good about the 23 season was that as soon as he exploded against the Seahawks, I think it was a game. There wasn't any question about him getting a fair number of touches after that. First of all, the Ravens didn't yet have Derrick Henry in the building. But the, you know, Gus Edwards and the other guys they had at that time, there wasn't a question about him getting lots of touches. Now with Derrick Henry, it's been more difficult to figure out because both of them are really first and second down backs. They're not guys in either case. You mentioned some of the outside of the frame catching that I point back to people to the first show on Derrick Henry, but Keaton Mitchell also has had, while he should be a guy who I think would be an outstanding third down receiver, he certainly is not a good pass blocker. And that's a big hold up for him.
Yes. I would say, you know, ideally you use Keaton Mitchell first and second downs and you use the screen game as an extension of the run game with him.
Yeah.
So you, that wheel route, I can't remember which game it was. Maybe it was the last game in Pittsburgh. But he could have came down with it. You know, it would have been a difficult catch, but it hit him in the hands once he adjusted. That's not really where you want Keaton Mitchell. You go ahead and swing him a ball on first and 10, or maybe even a second and 12, Ken, get back on track type of play. Mm-hmm. And just see if he can make it. You have high upside for it. You know, he gets his 5 yards, fine. If he breaks a tackle, he could be gone. So, you know, as far as his receiving prowess, I agree with you. I would just say you minimize that by the types of opportunities you give them and just swing the ball to them somewhere at the line or behind the line of scrimmage, I should say.
Yeah, definitely like that idea. And as an extension of the run game, that's exactly what you're trying to do is get Keaton Mitchell into space on the outside. So it should be useful to try and do it out there as well.
And Ken, did you mention his touches per game? Is this where I can jump in on that?
Yeah, you can.
Okay. You know, just looking at the game log, you know, down the stretch of the season, I thought we found our groove with him. An 8 to 10 touch type of running back to me, Ken, I would worry about extending him over that, especially over a 17 game season where you're starting talking about like 150, 170 type touches. I do, you know, and maybe this is just personal bias, but I do feel like you have to manage his workload a little bit. From the very first preseason where he had the, you know, a big hit and he had a shoulder injury. This goes beyond the just unfortunate, unlucky knee injury that he had. I'm just talking about the bumps and bruises, the day-to-day, the getting banged up at his size. I would like to see Keaton between 8 to 10 touches and just make him count.
Okay, here's a question I have for you. How many times, let me do this, I'll do his career. Okay. How many times in his career has Keaton Mitchell had, let me see if I've got this all here together. I don't think I have it all together, darn it. Okay. I was going to ask how many times has he had more than six touches in a single game? There are only four times this last year where he did it.
Yeah.
And even if I go back to 23, they used him very consistently at the end of that year. He did have five games where he had 9+ carries, and then he had targets in the receiving game in each of those as well that don't increase the number that he had 6+, but still it's 5 games even in 23.
Yeah, man. Hey, I want to use him. And I'm on the same page with the coaches is, hey, we don't really want to give him 15 touches unless this is a,
right.
You know, other people are hurt and this right. is just an outlier of a game. But, you know, 7 to 9 to 10, depending on how the game's going, maybe you lean on him a little bit more. That's kind of where I see him in this role.
And that brings up an interesting problem because if Keaton Mitchell is your number 2 back, we'll call him that, and Henry is your number 1 back, if Henry gets hurt, Keaton Mitchell really can't take on that kind of a Derrick Henry high workload role. You almost have to have another guy you bring in, whether that becomes it probably wouldn't be a Justice Hill either. It might be a Rasheen Ali would start getting a surprisingly high total of carries if something like that were to happen.
And this is a point that I'm sure we're going to get into later to the show, but it makes that third running back on the roster kind of more important, doesn't it? From a pass blocking perspective, from a special teams perspective, from a Derrick Henry getting older perspective, for Keaton Mitchell not being on the roster, you know, both of those guys you could consider year to year at this point. Again, I don't know what Derrick Henry's thinking, but that third running back, you really got to get that right, I think.
So in 2024, they didn't even have a third running back snap. I think it was until week 15. A third running back carry, sorry, not snap, carry, until week 15, which was a remarkable year of health. You can't depend on it every year. And in 2025, it was a little surprising that they actually kept 4 running backs the whole year on the roster. Now, that didn't, I'm not including the Justice Hill IR time, because then they went down to 3 when that happened. But they had Henry, Hill, Mitchell, and Ali on the roster for the entire season. And that extra roster spot was causing some pain in terms of who they had to cut, like Jalen Armour Davis or other players, a 10th lineman, Dellinger could have been kept on the team. I mean, there was some pain involved in that. And I think the Ravens finally did get a payoff for it, but it definitely was not an obvious call all the way through.
Well, I don't want to sound harsh here, Ken, but it was never a choice to me. They were going to keep 4 running backs. I remember disagreeing with you with, he said Ali was a slim chance to make it or something of that nature during the preseason when we talked. But like with the kickoff returns actually being back into play again and then wanting a running back, I considered that they were going to go with the 9 offensive linemen. It didn't have anything to do with Jalen Armour Davis. It was 25 on offense, 25 on defense, and they were going to give that spot to a running back instead of offensive lineman. Yeah.
And they may come to regret that given their 26 offensive line situation, but I basically am in agreement with you. They used Wallace some on kick returns. He wasn't active the whole year either. He had some healthy scratches, and they used Wester some towards the end of the year on some kickoffs. It's not like they had no other choices. They do prefer a running back in that. I just question the relative value of the thing.
Well, hey, coach, so we'll see, you know.
Yeah, that might certainly change. All right. So other things about Mitchell, he reached 20+ miles per hour, one of the highest number of times in the entire league. So he did it like 6 times, despite only, I want to say it was 59 carries on the season. I might be wrong about that. I got to look at that again, make sure.
I got it right here, buddy. Yeah. Yeah. He had 59 carries. And caught 9 of 12. So you're talking 68 touches.
And so this was only on his runs, but he hit 20 plus miles per hour 6 times, which was among the most in the entire league. So he's still doing that for you. 10 runs of 10 plus yards. He had 10 missed tackles forced on 59 carries, which is a higher rate than Derrick Henry. The way that those missed tackles are forced is very different, but it's still very effective in terms of piling up extra yardage. And of course, that helped his 5.8 yards per carry number. But I guess one of the things I'll let you respond to that before I move on.
I was just going to say it's a crucial part of our offense to have that kind of speed. Other than Lamar Jackson, that was part of the reason I was, no Isaiah Likely to start the season, no Pat Ricard, Then you went through not having Lamar Jackson. I would have liked to seen him used way more in the first half of the year until finally, I think it was, after the second Cincinnati game where they really started to use him. After the first Cincinnati game, I take it back. So that first Pittsburgh game, 6 rushes, then 8, then 9, then 9. And then in that last Pittsburgh game, only 2 yep. rushes for yep. some reason. So you got to have the change of pace, I think, back there. And as you said, Ken, I think you said mentioned it beautifully. No matter who your other running back is, Keaton Mitchell is a change of pace with that kind of speed.
I'm getting a lot of feedback from you now. Can you put headphones on? Or
yeah, not sure yeah, sure. Yes, go ahead. You can change.
I'll go ahead. Used only minimally in a gadget and pony role this last year, which is something I thought we might see more of. So, jet motion of Keaton Mitchell is very effective, and starting him on the outside could be something that really causes consternation in your opponent in terms of trying to figure out how they're going to be reacting to him. And when he would motion through the backfield, I think he was effective in that regard. There are a few handoffs, a couple of jet tosses that worked that way, but largely you're giving the opponent a chance to get themselves out of position. And it's an element of misdirection that the Ravens still had, despite the fact that Lamar didn't have the same set of legs that he had before.
There you go, Ken. If you want to go on to the next topic, because I missed a little chunk of
okay,
that.
Okay, it sounds good. I appreciate that. You sound better now. He only had 5.3 yards per target on his 12 balls. He'd previously been at 10.1 for his career in very limited duty, but he had been very effective on a few passes before that.
Yeah, you mentioned his receiving earlier. I think that will continue to be a weapon for him. Even though it was a down year this year. What was it? Only 12 targets. 12 targets. So it's kind of tough to judge.
Were you at all surprised by the limited use of Mitchell in gadget and pony roles?
Kind of, but I know that they're in love with Zay and having Zay in motion. But yeah, pony for sure. Pony for sure. Without Likely earlier in the year, that's when I thought would be a perfect time for it. I mean, he's coming off a preseason. That's just, it's like in preseason, everybody's getting work. And then during the regular season, I don't think the guys are getting as much work as they are in the preseason through training camp. So it just seemed like a perfect time to use a fresh in the groove Keaton Mitchell.
All right. Now, kind of a big contract question coming up with Mitchell, because he's an RFA this year. And I think the Ravens may look at the tender on him to be too pricey, even at the minimum level. It's in the $3 million range. It might be in the high threes this year. And even considering that that's not guaranteed, they are, putting him up there for a number that might be more than they really want to pay. To me, this is one of the ones that the Ravens should really try and get done before the league year begins, so they don't end up in a bidding war with a number team or having to make a tender that they don't want to, or they may later have to pull, as they've done for offensive linemen in the past. Not oftentimes, but a couple of times. And one was with Hurst and Jensen the same year, both got the tender, and then they both had it pulled and their salary was reduced to something just over $1 million for the year, which is kind of a sneaky way to do it. I don't think it earns you points with your players, but it might end up being the way that they deal with it with Mitchell if they can't come to an agreement before 3/11.
No, I'm 100% with you on that. I really don't even have anything to add. That's, ideally you want to get this thing done. He's a player that you want to keep. I think you overall philosophically, you're willing to give a little bit just to keep him and keep him around. And because, go ahead, Ken.
Would you want him for more than 1 year? Would you go 2 or 3 years on him?
I would. Especially if you spread that out, the cap's going to keep going up. Maybe that's a way in which you can give him the security that he would want instead of hitting the open market. Maybe he thinks he can cash in better on the open market. Be like, well, hey, what if we give you multi-years at our price? Yeah. Maybe he would take that security.
Well, that's what the Ravens would probably be competing with in terms of an offer sheet if they tender him and they have the right of first refusal, is some other team may want him for 3 years for $13 million or something, and the Ravens would have to consider whether or not they're willing to make that kind of a commitment to him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I don't know why, Ken, but I feel ultimately, and maybe this is my, just my own bias, that they'll find a way to keep him here.
All right. Well, I hope you're right.
What do you think?
Do I think they'll keep him or not?
Am I too optimistic? I guess the best way I could say it is I feel like they'll find a way to keep him. I don't put a percentage on it, but I think they want to keep him. Like
they certainly want to keep him.
Like they'll make a good effort to it. Won't be a token, hey, here's our money.
Right. That's kind of where this falls. Is it's always going to be right player, right price with the Ravens. I probably am more comfortable assigning a percentage to it in terms of can the teams come together than making just a statement about whether or not they want him. They obviously want him. I mean, you couldn't not want Keaton Mitchell, but chance of be back 60, 65.
Yeah. See, I'm thinking that, or maybe even a little higher because I said, I think that they're willing to go a little bit above their, it's always right player, right price. But again, this is backup running back money we're talking about. This isn't, you know, edge rusher. Do we pay him the $20 million and the 80 guaranteed or whatever, you know, huge money. So I feel like they'll be a little more willing to appease him in that way. And maybe it goes up to a 70% okay. chance.
All right. Well, fair enough. We got to move on here and talk about the other running backs here. Rasheen, I'll leave you actually hit on a little bit. He only actually played 119 snaps this last year, which surprised me in terms of how low it was. I actually got to make sure that's right. I wonder if that's just past snaps I was looking at or something. But in terms of playing time, was out there on third down a lot.
He certainly was. I mean, he filled his role on this team. I want to say you kind of got what you expected, but I think that it would have been fair to expect a little bit more activity and for him to stand out and have the type of year where you would say, look, we're ready to move on from Justice Hill. Let's take that $3 to $4 million cap saving. Rasheen Ali's ready to step into that role, and we got him for 2 more years. And I don't think he had necessarily that type of year.
Right. I agree. I don't think so. And yet I'm not sure who the Ravens have that would be an obviously better choice at running back currently, which we'll get to, I'm sure, and we look forward to how this position will be constructed next year. But you know, took over the Justice Hill role as soon as Hill was hurt, and initially looked very good in that game against Cincinnati, and after that, not so much. He had only 7 carries for 25 yards the whole year, which goes to show you how little the Ravens like to give the ball to anybody not named Mitchell or Henry.
And 4 of those came in garbage time in that Cincinnati game. So, I mean, practically it was like a give-up play that he got the ball on, and some garbage time. So he really was truly not in the rushing plan at all. I'm looking, Ken, it was 119 snaps on offense, 220 on special teams.
Yeah. That is a key special teams player for the Ravens. That's for sure. Not only just the kickoff returns, but he plays on multiple units, and that's something the Ravens need. They have a few of their core guys. Most of what they need is bigs, but Ali was a guy who, is a valuable multi-unit player.
Doing my special teams coverage study this week, actually. I slipped on that during the regular season. Return teams, not really going to dig into probably this offseason, but I want to see kick coverage, especially with this new rule change. So I feel like he was down there a good bit, you know, caused chaos if he didn't make the tackle. First one on the scene type of guy, create a pile type of guy. So I feel like he did well in the kick coverage aspect. Kick returns, I noticed him quite a bit when he did not get the ball. When he was that lead blocker, the fullback on kick returns, I thought he did a really good job. So I want to say he was an asset, a true asset in special teams. But as a third down back, some of these guys come out of college, Ken, and they're undrafted or they're late round guys and they're impact players. So, Rasheen Ali's roster spot, I think, is very much up in the air for this coming year, even if they let go of Justice.
They do kind of need a back who can do something more for them in terms of a heavy workload if it's thrust upon him. And Ali may or may not be that guy, but certainly he made contributions on special teams. His, I always talk about special teams missed tackle rates are higher, so you can't judge them in the same way. He did miss 6 out of 17, so he's at 35.3% in terms of missed tackles, which seems a little high, but I think that's about normal. The Ravens have a few guys they concentrated most of their special teams tackles into. So Keandre Jackson, for example, was one of the best special teams players in the whole league this last year. And they, the Ravens have a handful of other guys, Hummel and some others, who between them, they had a lot of the total tackles.
Right. Well, Keandre is something else.
He's a Tasmanian devil, isn't he? Hi, folks. The Super Bowl is here, and MyBookie is where you can turn your bets into bankroll. Are you scheduled to go to the Super Bowl party, and you don't want to be there? Yeah, I've been to that party, too. Managing your portfolio of wagers through the evening can be your ticket through Super Sunday without getting caught up in your brother-in-law's political rhetoric. Whatever your take on the game, MyBookie has both side and prop bets to make your Super Sunday a lot of fun. That's why I use MyBookie. You've probably heard them talked about on Jimmy Kimmel Live for their deep board of prop bets. These bets become some long-lasting memories, including watching Refrigerator Perry score in Super Bowl 20 at 100-1 odds. If there's ever a time to get in, it's right now. One account, one wallet, bet the spread, live bet the second half, hit the casino during commercials. It all lives in one place. Go to mybookie.ag now, use promo code Ravens, and get your first bet covered up to $500. If it doesn't hit, use your bet back bonus token and run it back. Don't just watch the big game, make it pay on MyBookie.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. The new year doesn't have to mean a whole new you. Sometimes it's just about feeling a little less burdened. And one thing, for instance, I'm working on is letting go of that constant pressure to have everything figured out. Like I need to be perfect or I am behind if I'm not. Therapy can help you identify what's weighing you down or holding you back by giving you an unbiased perspective so you can better understand your relationships, your motivations, and your emotions. And BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with a qualified therapist. Their therapists are fully licensed in the U.S. and work according to a strict code of conduct. They also do initial matching work for you so you can focus on your goals. You'll fill out a short questionnaire. With their experience and strong matching process, they typically get it right the first time. And if you're not happy with your match, you can switch to a different therapist at any time from tailored recommendations. BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with qualified therapists. Sign up and get 10% at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com.
Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything. Data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game. Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Reggie, I just sold my car online.
Let's go, Grandpa. Wait, you did?
Yep, on Carvana. Just put in the license plate, answered a few questions, got an offer in minutes. Easier than setting up that new digital picture frame.
You don't say.
Yeah, they're even picking it up tomorrow. Talk about fast.
Wow, way to go. So, about that picture frame.
Forget about it. Until Carvana makes one, I'm not interested.
Car selling made easy. On Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
I guess that's about all we have to talk about. But I would say, if there's one thing, if Rasheen Ali is going to get some position-specific coaching this offseason, like really figuring out pass blocking, deriving a bigger understanding of pass blocking would be a huge thing he could bring to the table for next camp. There's not going to be coaches who necessarily have any buy-in on him at all. So he's gonna have to reprove himself to a new coaching staff. And they're going to have to really see him be able to block if he's going to maintain that third down role.
100%. And, you know, I think that something that I've learned and gravitated to, and, you know, I've scouted for a long time, but this even more recently, is that size plays more than speed. And you remember, Ken, when we drafted him, all this talk about Rasheen Ali's explosiveness. And I told you, I just don't see it. You know, was he at Marshall, I think. That explosiveness is gone. You would not confuse Rasheen Ali with Keaton Mitchell, not even right. In the same breath. Does he break tackles? Is he a big Derrick Henry type back? You wouldn't consider him a power back either. So just to back you up on that point, Ken, he has got to find his niche as a third down back, a master protector of the quarterback, an outlet, good at chip blocks, all that kind of thing, because I don't think – somebody's going to look at Rasheen Ali and say, hey, we need to get this guy the ball at least 8 times a game.
Right. No, that I would agree completely. And he did a lot for himself because the Ravens were having trouble figuring out how to attack teams that crowded the line of scrimmage. And in that Cincinnati game that they won to kind of get their season turned around again for the second time, after the consecutive lose losses to Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, they went to Cincinnati. They won the game 24-0. But on the drive where they scored, I don't remember if it was the first drive or the second drive that they scored on, but they had two beat the crowding plays. One was a pass where Lamar kind of released its sidearm to Hopkins, and it went for 32 yards. And the other one was getting the ball outside to Rasheen Ali outside the kind of the framework of the defense, where he went for a 30-yard touchdown. And those two plays really caused the Bengals to back off in that game in a way that was very positive.
Yeah, the old audible play, Ali, that really, really, I don't want to say swung the game because we shut him out, but that definitely changed the game from there. Like you said, backed him off the line of scrimmage. And, you know, we talked about Keaton as a lot today. When these guys are shooting gap, you talk about coming into the Ravens game, what is everybody preaching? You've got to stop Derrick Henry before he gets started. You look at the two guys that we had at guard, very heavy-footed type guys. They wanted to crash that A-gap. They wanted to shoot the B-gap to stop Derrick Henry before he got started. And those games turned into Keaton Mitchell games. The pitter-patter, the change of direction. If you stack the line of scrimmage like the Bengals did, we have somebody that can make you pay for being over-aggressive in the running game. Yeah, that's why I say, man, I just like the idea of bringing Derrick Henry and Keaton back and really trying to upgrade that third running back spot. And if they want to keep four running backs and one of those guys is Keaton and Justice again, I'm cool with it. But we have got to go into the season with a third down back who can contribute in the running game that we're confident in.
All right, let's move on to Patrick Ricard. He made his sixth Pro Bowl this year and AP2, and that's despite missing a fair amount of time. If you look at his playing time between the Roman era and the Monken era, the Roman era in 2022, when the Ravens had the heaviest offense of all time, basically, 64% of the snaps he played. During Monken, his snaps have been reduced, but they've been very consistent. 39% of the snaps in 23, 40% in 24. And I'm asterisking this one, 41%, but when healthy in 2025 under Monken. So he's played a very consistent percentage of the snaps when he's been healthy in these 3 years. Obviously, a lot is going to depend on who the Ravens bring in, who the next offensive coordinator is, and whether they even want to run an offense with a fullback, or they think they can get more out of Lamar Jackson without one.
It's so true, Ken. And man, you know, I just feel maybe it's just the experience from the last 7 years or so, but I would feel a comfort blanket with Pat Ricard, because we've just seen him. You know, we can run different pass plays by asking him to take the D end. I mean, two of the highlights on the highlight tape that I just released to Pat Ricard is him blocking TJ Watt, and Lamar's rolling out to that side. And it's like, you know, what a weapon to have a fullback that can do that. And then the other part of it, Ken, is I don't know where you stand on this, but it was pretty clear to me this year, and something I was calling for on the channel, is we needed to run the ball out of more spread looks, and we needed to throw the ball off of play action and heavier formations. So I really liked Ricard's impact, like even in the passing game. Yeah, he was closing out games. Yeah, he was a beast clearing rushing lanes, of course. But just having him in the game, changing the numbers, and having Lamar, run play action with Lamar Jackson seemed very, very effective in opening up level two and just scheming people open. So I hope, you know, I just want the right coach for the job, but I would think that coach, if he's worth his salt, would say, hey, we got a player that we really like, the organization really likes, that wants to stay here. Can I use him? I can use him.
That's an area where DaCosta will actually have the last say. So if they got to work together in a lot of ways, but if DaCosta says, hey, look, I'm using the VSB on this guy again, that's $1.5 million that I can't spend otherwise. I want you to find a way to make use of this guy. And the Ravens organization always has. So, you know, we've had a lot of success in 6 Pro Bowls out of Pat Ricard. It should be one of the questions they're asking on the interview, not on the first day of training camp. Let's put it that
way. That's right, Ken. This is a very organization. But yeah, like, hey, look, I'm just saying offensive coordinator X should be excited to have this monster want to stay in Baltimore and build his legacy. Monken eventually came around to it. Weren't they experimenting with him at guard in 2023?
Here's what they did. I don't think they really ever experimented with him playing guard in a significant way in the preseason. They had some offensive line drills and something. I don't think they really spent any significant time. What they wanted to do is dress only 7 linemen, claim Patrick Ricard was a guard, and then have their 48. So that was the trick they're playing. And they had that with the defensive linemen a few years back. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. I do. Yeah. That's very funny. Yeah. Where they had them, right, just to get that roster spot. But yeah, man, I'll stand by it. Like, you don't know what this new coordinator is going to want to do. But I would think that, like you said, whether Eric DaCosta has the final say, I mean, I think it's going to be a partnership. I think Bisciotti kind of explained that. But they want somebody to have the Ravens' vision. It's very, very clear to me. And I just can't see – I want to say Ricard's going to stay. He's going to be a part of this plan, and he's going to want to stay here. And he just bails you out, man. He bails you out. It's one of those things I think Ricard was very candid about. They asked him on the lounge one time about where his head was at when Roman left, and him having that uncertainty if he was going to be here and going to be used. And, you know, I would say that if you asked Todd Monken about him, he would say, man, I didn't know how I was going to use this guy. I never really had a fullback before, but I damn sure liked having him on the team.
Yeah.
You know, I want Ricard on my team. Do wonder if you mess around, he might be a New York Giant or wherever. Yeah,
that's exactly the issue. So Monken moved on and Harbaugh moved on, but I think Monken has come to love him, and Harbaugh always loved him in terms of wanting him back. And that's probably what concerns me most, is that the Giants with their cap situation may be willing to spend more on a player like Ricard, just because he's a different kind of a foundation for their offense, than the Ravens will be willing to sign. Because I think it's It's Vetmin plus VSB dollars for Ricard here in Baltimore, which means he makes about $2.8, $2.9 million in that range, and counts only the Vetmin against the cap. Whereas if he goes to New York, you know, they could outbid the Ravens for him at, you know, say $3.5 million, $4 million, and that would be that.
You want a culture setter. There you go. You want to bring your culture over.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if think about him and Scatabu together is pretty.
That would be pretty fun. I mean, Derrick Henry is, you know, yeah. But I wonder if they would like Marlon Humphrey might be a good culture setter for the Giants. You want to give a little bit of the TikTok
podcasting skills.
Skills over there, yeah. Goofy, and, you know, saying, I don't know what to tell the young guys when they say, why are we losing? If you want some of that little brother energy, maybe the Giants could use that for their culture over there.
It's not impossible. Just recorded a podcast on the future of Marlon Humphrey right before this. Oh. And so the question was, you know, do the Ravens keep him? Do they try and, you know, change the price on him, which they could go back to him. Do they even try and extend him and get him fully committed to the move to safety, which I think it's in the cards right now. I don't think they could put it off any longer, given the year he just had, even though he's hurt.
Because you want Kyle Hamilton at nickel.
It doesn't
matter if Marlon is a good nickel or not. You got Kyle Hamilton. He's one of the most generational type talent at that nickel spot, and then moving to dime linebacker is just, my goodness, with him mugging the A-gap and dime is just ridiculous. So if Marlon's not an outside corner, is what I'm getting at, he's got to move to safety.
Yes, but there are a lot of snaps that are still available to your slot corner on third down. And Marlon might or might not be the perfect guy for this. Maybe Ardarius Washington is the perfect guy to play the slot corner on third down, because those snaps are available when Hamilton moves to dime.
Right.
And you want to have for a lot of reasons, a big body is good. For other reasons, a smaller guy who can react more quickly to a receiver is good. But the Ravens have a good set to choose from among those slot corners. The problem is, I think Marlon is really, his skills are very portable to safety. A lot of the second man to the ball for fumbles, a lot of the off man coverage skills in terms of making interceptions, a lot of reading the quarterback. He's got a lot of that. And I couldn't even come up in the previous discussion whether or not he'd be better at free safety or strong safety. I'll give you the benefit of each. At strong safety, he can jump in for Hamilton if Hamilton rushes the quarterback, and you don't lose very much in terms of that slot corner role. If he's at free safety, his reads could well be better than anybody else they have, including Starks and certainly including Gilman as well, I would say. So Gilman won't be around anymore, but really it's Ardarius is the other guy who would be competing for a split field role.
I'll just put it this way. I don't see it being a slam dunk. I would say less than 50-50 chance he works out in either safety role. I'm much lower on him than you are.
Less than 50% he works, he succeeds in either safety role, as opposed to he's willing to do it.
Oh, he's willing to do it, yeah. But I'm just saying, will he be any good at it? Like, his tackling has major declined. His physicality has majorly declined. His angles when he's working, I've seen him in the back of cover three. I've seen him try to cover tight ends. If he wasn't healthy, then maybe that has to do with it. But doing a lot of the safety things like manning up on tight ends and the back of zone coverage, he was not good. He was just not good. His tackling angles were poor. Think of like the two touchdown runs he gave up. I forget the game. They got outside of him and it was just bad. He is not the same.
Malik Willis against Green Bay. Yes. You're talking about. Yeah.
Yes, that was one of them, but there was actually another one. Maybe it was twice in that game, but and then in free safety, his ability to flip his hips and some other things. I'm not quite sure, bro. Like I don't know. I think he wants to take a pay cut, wants to stay here at all costs. That's kind of the read I get from him.
Okay, and then hopefully that works out. And I kind of really love the idea that he would start at safety and then move back to corner. And the last guy that they did that for, I think, was Brandon Stevens. And that kind of worked out for the Ravens for 1 year anyway, in terms of him moving back to corner from a projected safety role to start the season. I think that it is possible that that's what we see out of Marlon this year, and it's what the Ravens try and give me. Finished dead last in PFF cornerback coverage.
Yeah. So, hey, apologies out there to Marlon and all of his fans. I think Marlon's a great Raven, a true Raveler. I'm just done. I think I'm done. Okay. I don't believe in the move to safety, for just to be on the record with
that. All right. Well, that's good. I'm glad we have somebody else who has a different opinion of that, because I'm pretty much all on board with that. I think the other choices that they have are going to all cost money. And I think Marlon gives you not only value on the back end, he gives you flexibility to move back to corner if you need that during the season, which, by the way, we all know is very likely. They will need that. All right, let's move on. Besides Ricard, Lucas Scott is still around. He spent the entire year on the practice squad. I'll say this. I think there is a very high chance that one of Scott or Ricard is poached from the Ravens on the Giants before the season starts or for camp.
You know, I'm not sure, because why on earth was Zaire Mitchell Payne active instead of Lucas Scott to start this season? It made no sense. Like, their preseason tape couldn't have been any more different. Lucas Scott handled business in the preseason, and yet they wanted to go with a converted tight end at fullback to start. So does Harbaugh not a fan of Lucas Scott? I'm not sure. That's where I'm going with that.
Well, you know, Lucas Scott was a converted tackle, of course, from Army. But the Ravens do have good success in bringing in, you know, big men who have some athleticism and allowing them to do exactly what Ricard did. I don't think that it was a unreasonable call necessarily, and largely because there's a whole bunch of things I can't see. So in camp, there's not a whole lot of reps for Lucas Scott. In the preseason, yeah, there's some reps and they're live fire and they're higher value. And then there's a whole bunch of things happening in practice that I'm not privy to, that I can't see. And I have to assume that Mitchell might have been putting the ball on the ground or something during practice, and that was part of the reason why he couldn't get active on game day. Or that Scott was just not looking as good, because, I mean, they had a choice between Scott and Zaire Mitchell Payton, and that did not really seem to make a lot of sense. You're 100% right. So there's got to be something else that they're judging on that we just don't see in the same way. And it could be as simple as Zaire Mitchell Payton is a much better special teams player. We'll deal with having a 8% worse fullback.
That could 100%, both of those things, could be stuff we don't see, or maybe add special teams. Either way, that is actually even a better argument for why I don't think Harbaugh is like a threat to poach Lucas Scott.
Okay. Well, let's go through the 2025 needs as quickly as possible. We need to determine if Keaton Mitchell could be re-signed, even if the original tender might be too high, but they need to find some combination of years and dollars that actually work for both Keaton Mitchell and the team. Maybe for ranking these, this would be kind of fun, but that's pretty high on my list of what they need to figure out for this next year, because I think he's important.
Be willing to work with Keaton. Have your price. If it costs a little bit more, if you have to extend the year, a year or two, do it to keep this man as your change of pace. Because just schematically, again, Ken, if the defensive lineman, the opposing defense, is hell-bent on penetrating against our defensive line, you need a back to make him pay. And Keaton Mitchell, with the change of direction and pure speed, is the definition of that.
Yeah, I love the way they ran this year with having two-man counters moving the opposite direction of Keaton a lot of times. And Keaton's just out running four guys to the edge on that side. That was fun to watch.
Yeah.
Number two is make the decision on Justice Hill. They got a $3.15 million savings. We talked about various ways they could try and do that. They could ask Justice to take less money, which I think is a real possibility, since I think they still value him. But I don't think he stays at his current number.
Me neither. And I think that how they feel about, or how the new staff and DaCosta feel about Rasheen Ali, has a lot to do with Justice Hill's future.
All right. If you're talking about Rasheen Ali, determining who the best pass blocking option is for obvious passing downs is next. And maybe that is Justice Hill, or maybe it's Ali. Ali and Hill both had lousy years this year, so they may even be looking for another guy out of college. Wouldn't shock me if they drafted a running back in any sense. It would shock me if they drafted a running back that they're really reaching for quality. I don't see them, reaching for a second round back like Dobbins or Rice to try and supplement who Derrick Henry is.
No, I'm totally with you. I think they would go into the season with Ali if they had to. You know, maybe they view him as, look, we want him as our fourth, an option for our fourth back if the third guy, a guy we draft or RFA or UDFA, excuse me, doesn't cut it. But I will add to that, you say determine who the best pass blocking option is for obvious passing downs. I want to throw special teams in there with that.
Oh, that's fair.
He's going to have to play teams too. So,
okay. Because the best combination of obvious passing downs and special teams, because that player likely will have.
So, like, if they think Ali and Hill are similar in the pass blocking, but they think Ali's a much better, so they would go with Ali.
Okay. All right. And Hill certainly had been a great special teams player early in his career. So they could return Hill to a greater special teams role once they're committed to Keaton Mitchell and Henry being backs one and two.
There you go. Yeah, that's another way to slice it, for sure.
Another thing they didn't try. I think they need to determine if there's a reasonable price they can find to re-sign Ricard. If the Giants are willing to do something like sign Ricard for 2 years, though, there's just no way they're going to be able to compete with that. They're not going to be willing to compete with it, and they probably shouldn't be. But they should know what their next move is if they're letting Ricard walk out the door, which may certainly happen. And they have to learn what that is in the process of interviewing head coaches and the offensive coordinators who they might consider for that role as well.
Yeah, I think we did a really nice job of talking about that just a little while ago.
Okay. And then I guess the other big question is they need to get younger on a weighted by carries basis. This running back group is very old. Ali is the only guy who's a little bit young. Mitchell is not super old. He's in his fourth season, but think about running backs, the length of their career, and the fact that Keaton Mitchell's never been super durable. You don't have a big, high contribution of a younger age on a weighted by carries basis. Henry's as much of an old age contribution of weighted by carries as you can get, and Hill is not a young man either. So if they retained him, I think they do need to go to the draft and at least get somebody they think might work out in round 5, 6, 7, whenever it might be, that they have another competitor in camp for a roster spot.
Agreed. And for those reasons, Henry, age, obviously, and wear and tear, outlier for sure, but you just never know. Keaton Mitchell, speed-based game. If that's, you know, another major injury and he can't hit over 20 miles an hour, his availability, and then, of course, he's an 8 to 10 carry a guy at the most. Hill, coming off another injury, getting older. Ali, unproven, not really an explosive type player. Wouldn't really consider him for first and second down carries if you needed a guy. So you add all that up, Ken. I mean, even if they say, all right, we got 5 5th round picks and we're picking, you know, in the middle of the 4th round and we want one. If there's a guy that smacks them in the face, is this could be Derrick Henry's successor, Keaton Mitchell's successor, significant upgrade for Ali. I think they got to consider taking one. Of course, it just depends on the quality of running backs in the draft, what system they're running, yada, yada, yada. But yeah, 5th round to undrafted seems about right. But I think they have to prioritize that a little bit more than fans would think. You know, if you got 5 5th round picks, if you think you can hit on a starting caliber running back, then you do it.
I guess I missed out on the fact they had 5 5th round picks. Does that include the one they traded for?
I think it includes the compensatory picks and everything else, but you might want to double check me on that. I thought it was 5 and the 5th.
Well, they traded Draymond's, the 5th round pick for Draymond. So, and that did not get upgraded to a 4 because they didn't make the playoffs.
Because they didn't make the playoffs.
So I'm wondering about it. Yeah, it looks like the Ravens have 4 5th round picks.
Okay, so
1-1, 1-1, 4-1-2. By round, and then there's probably projected in this draft tech tool already.
Yeah, that's why I was getting ready to go to draft tech.
Yeah,
yep. So 4 5th round picks, still a lot of picks for that round.
All right, never fails when we talk football for a long time, Jason. But we need more time together to catch up on our many football things we talk about, so we don't have throw it all into one running back show, even when we're talking about the Ravens pass rush. But really appreciate you coming on. Always great to talk football with you. Where can people find your work?
Sure. Apologies to the next guest. I know you got a busy day, but Huddle It Up Films on YouTube and Twitter, but YouTube mentioned on the first show, it is highlight season. So a new highlight every day of a new player. Ricard's has already just come out. all offensive linemen, defensive players. I'm grading the plays. So it's not just, hey, let me grab their stats. When they make a nice block, when they plug up a hole and somebody else gets credit for a tackle or a sack, coverage plays where the ball doesn't go their way. Malachi Starks is out now. 6.5 minutes of positive reps from Malachi Starks. That's all on the channel. And then Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, live show, live chat. Really nice people in there that I interact with every week. Your friend Alec Paulianis is on with me sometimes. I've had Dev on sometimes, Dev Pantois. So, yeah, just try to get some guests on there. And if not, I just go solo.
All right. All right. Appreciate you coming on, Jason. Other folks out there, thanks so much for listening. If you want to do the show a favor, write us a 5-star, 50-word review. We always appreciate that. And otherwise, just tell that one next person about this show who might like the contact. We're always looking for lots of word of mouth transmission. Thanks very much, Jason, for coming on.
Ken, thanks so much. God bless you. Thank you to everybody listening.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Comfort is often the first thing we're willing to give up, like taking a long flight for a vacation or waking up early for a workout. But don't let style be the reason you aren't comfy. Mack Weldon's Ace Collection makes it effortless to look put together while feeling truly comfortable. No compromises needed. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed pieces to keep you comfortable anywhere. Inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, the Ace Collection combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and confident looks. Upgrade your collection for the new year with new bomber jackets, half-zips, sweats, crewnecks, and much more. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. Get comfortable anywhere with the Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MAC25. That's MACKWELDON.com. Promo code MAC25.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.